WNYC Studios is supported by the Natural Resources Defense Council. Using science, the law, and people power, NRDC is committed to confronting the climate crisis, protecting public health, and safeguarding nature. They address the impact of fossil fuels on communities and our environment. They help protect wildlife, public lands, and irreplaceable ecosystems that all living things depend on. They work to enact policies for clean air, clean water, and access to nature for all. You can help NRDC safeguard the Earth for future generations. Visit nrdc.org/WNYC for more information. WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off. WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of WNYC Studios and the New Yorker.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. The film Cyrano, which is up for an Oscar this year, tells a story you might be familiar with. A romantic tries to win the woman he loves despite having an extraordinarily large and unattractive nose.
First he has too much heart, and then not enough.
You're jealous.
Me?
It's fascinating. You're both brilliant, but exact opposites in style. Christian is overt, passionate, fiery.
Where is I?
You are coded. Witty. Rueful.
Coded?
His words aren't better than yours, just differently put. But both are endlessly quotable.
You know his letters by heart.
Everyone. You will arrange the meeting.
As ever, I am at your service.
Cyrano stars Peter Dinklage, who also starred in the stage musical version that the film is based on. Dinklage came on our program in 2019. Game of Thrones had just wrapped epically, and he hit the stage for the musical Cyrano. Like a nice
audio version. I see. I've done 12 shows in the past 8 days. I'm fried. Okay. Gotcha.
No problem.
Peter Dinklage spoke with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman about how he connects with the character.
I never felt a connection with the nose of it all. As a person who looks like me, whenever I would watch a version of Cyrano, I would just think about, that's an actor and a fake nose. And we wanted to really strip it all down and get to the core of what it really is about, which is everybody's capacity to not feel worthy of love, whether you have a giant nose or not.
He is very, very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yes. He is the most beautiful man I've ever seen.
I see. Have you spoken?
Never.
How do you know he loves you?
I know.
How can you love a man if you've never heard his voice?
I don't know, but I know that I do.
What if he's an idiot?
Then I will die.
It's really interesting how the show handles the nose part of Cyrano's story, because you, as you said, you don't wear a prosthetic nose, but other characters refer to his nose as like the
thing. We refer to it twice.
Right.
At the top.
Right, yeah. But in the audience, I guess we're left to sort of assume that they're talking in a maybe sideways way about your height, or were you a part of the decision about that? I mean, how did you all discuss how you wanted to handle the nose aspect of it and how it would be presented?
Right. I mean, it does present sort of a puzzle because I'm not wearing a nose and I am the height I am. So people are going, you could feel it. They're a bit confused, but that's okay, I think. Let them follow you down the rabbit hole. And but again, I don't think it has anything to do with my height either. I think Scott Stanglin, who is my understudy, he's 6 feet tall or something, and he can play the part probably as good or as better than I can.
Has he gone on?
No, not yet.
So we'll never know.
So it sort of has nothing to do with any of that, really. I was just cast because they wanted me for it, and I wanted to try something I've never done before.
Are you in love?
Why me? Yes, yes, I dare.
With whom?
Oh, only the most intelligent, beautiful creature.
With whom?
With such a description, you have to ask.
Whom do you love?
Have you ever wanted something so badly you cannot breathe? Have you ever loved someone?
The adapter and director, Erica Schmidt.
Who I should say is your wife.
Years ago, got in touch with the band The National because their music is so romantic and filled with yearning and sometimes heartbreaking. And Matt's lyrics are so poetic, much like Cyrano's words, that it was such a natural fit, and they responded immediately, and they wrote these beautiful songs.
Many people probably have not seen you sing before, but you were in a punk band in the 90s.
Yeah.
Please tell me about your punk band.
We were punks, but we didn't play punk rock. A couple of friends from Columbia and a couple of friends from where I went to school in Bennington, Vermont. We got together and we just drank too much and played the old CBGBs, and we had a lot of fun. We had a following, but our following was kind of like progressive rock. It was all guys. What's the point of being in a rock band if there's no ladies, if you don't have any groupies? But I never intended to be in a band. It was just fun for me. And
the group was called Wizzy?
Wizzy, yeah.
Who came up with the name?
I think our drummer Jim did. But I felt I was being like a dilettante. I felt like they were all real musicians, and they still are. And I was just slumming it, being, you know, I don't know, just having fun. And I don't think that's fair.
What were some of your songs called?
I think this New Yorker Radio Hour is too clean for
no,
some of the
not.
Song titles.
No, it's not.
Well, we had...
That makes me only want to know the song titles more.
Well, one was called Dick of the Party, about being a loser drunk at a party. So I'll leave it there.
So speaking of your many talents, you now have your own production company. And one of the things that you have done is this HBO film, My Dinner with Hervé. And you play the French-born dwarf actor Hervé Villechaize, who is known for playing Nick Knack in the James Bond film The Man with the Golden Gun, and even more so for saying Duplain on the 70s TV show Fantasy Island. So this project was 14 years in the making, is that right?
Yeah.
And so the writer-director of the film, Sacha Gervasi, had met Hervé years earlier as a journalist, and they had this crazy night out on the town in Los Angeles. And then what happened?
Well, Hervé killed himself a couple days after Sasha said goodbye to him. So Sasha realized it was sort of a suicide note, which is in true Hervé style. The man did nothing quietly. he was something else. And I got to know people in his life. He's so deeply loved, and he burned so brightly. So you know, and it was just the first time I've ever played somebody who actually existed, mm-hmm. which was a real, really humbling, but also...
well, not only did he exist, but he was, I'm sure...
It's a complicated thing.
He was the, you know, the actor with dwarfism who was most famous before you. I mean...
Well, he didn't... I mean, he wasn't really an actor, to be fair. Sorry, Hervé, I love you. he was an incredible painter.
Right.
But he just enjoyed the lifestyle of it all. We're sort of opposite in that way. I enjoy the lifestyle, but I don't go for the I don't know. I try to keep a lower profile, but I enjoy the work itself. Hervé really liked, he loved being the rock star that he was. So that's, he was guilty of that, and but no fault to him, because he was having a really good time and he was sort of unapologetic about it.
Right.
But he never really let his size define him. He wooed and he won many, many women, which I feel like, because of his size, was treated in the press like, wow, that guy, that, you know, it's just like, no, that wouldn't happen with anybody else who was regular size. It just was like a novelty that he was with women. Well, yeah, he was. Deal with it. Because he was charming.
So he was on TV when you were growing up in the 70s. What were your feelings about him and about, you know, representation in popular culture of dwarfism in general?
When you're 8 years old, social justice is not really entering into your biosphere there. I remember being a little bit aware that in Fantasy Island he was the sidekick, and you know, but nothing that really bothered me. But then adolescence sort of changes all that, your perspective on if you live in a unique shape, you become hyper aware of the world around you and how it reacts to you and how you engage with it. I'm not always the most politically correct person in terms of my dwarfism. I don't care, really. I think that can be damaging as well, and put up walls. Meaning, like, for example, if I see a kid and he's pointing at me and the parent has them, like, look the other way, what's that kid going to grow up into? Somebody that can't make eye contact with somebody who's 4.5 feet tall? That's sad to me. I understand it in the moment because they don't want to embarrass me. You know, what are we going to have, like an educational seminar walking down the street with a child? You know, there's no time for that. But those little things add up to, in our DNA, in terms of how we see people unique, physically unique. And that can be destructive. I'm not an actor to, like, change the world in terms of, like, how somebody my size is presented. Mm-hmm. I'm really not. I think, because that would be putting me before the work, and I just am attracted to roles that don't, it's just bad writing to make that the dominant character trait. Right. It's not my dominant character trait. It's part of, you know, it has to be part of a complex portrait that informs other pieces of your personality.
Mm-hmm.
But I just know when you read a script that they just want you because it's not going to happen. If they want you just to be because the suit fits or something, you know.
That's actor Peter Dinklage talking with Michael Shulman in 2019. More in a moment.
WNYC Studios is supported by Wondery. 50 high school senior girls descend on Mobile, Alabama every summer to compete for a massive cash prize. It isn't Survivor. It's one of America's most lucrative scholarship competitions for teen girls. It's been around for 7 decades. Now you'll hear what took place behind the scenes. From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery comes The Competition. Host Shima Oliai was Nevada's contestant 20 years ago. Now she's returning as a judge to find out what 2 weeks with 50 of the country's most ambitious teens can tell us about girlhood in America. What happens when the competitors are thrown into the deep end with the best and brightest? And how does surviving the competition prepare them for everything that comes after? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. This episode of New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by ZBiotics. We all have busy lives these days and can't afford to waste a day on the couch because of a few drinks the night before. Luckily, a new product, ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic, is here to help. ZBiotics breaks down the byproduct of alcohol responsible for those rough mornings. Try it today by going to zbiotics.com/radiohour and get 15% off your first order when you use Radio Hour at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So, if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money. That's zbiotics.com/radiohour and use the code RADIOHOUR at checkout for 15% off. Hi, I'm Roz Chast from The New Yorker. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by NetSuite. Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on delivering your product or service, the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified platform. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/New Yorker. netsuite.com/New Yorker.
So I am going to have rocks thrown at me if I don't ask you about the finale of Game of Thrones. So I'm going to do it right now.
Who throws these rocks? The New Yorker is such a peaceful
people
magazine.
On this, people on, this, on the
street. Cartoonists?
Yeah, the cartoonists are going to
they throw pictures
me.
Of rocks.
Did you follow the fan response?
No. I mean, you're never going to make anybody happy with anything we do. Everybody's going to always have an opinion, and that means an ownership. But that means they really loved it. It's like breaking up with somebody. They get upset. And I can't speak for everybody, but my feeling is they didn't want it to end, so a lot of people got angry. This happens. Monsters are created. And you don't see it coming. We vote them into office. You know, it happens. So for everybody to get upset because they loved a character so much and they had so much faith in that person, there were signposts all along the way
for that character. You're speaking, of course, of, spoiler alert, Daenerys.
Yeah.
Targaryen.
Yeah.
Took a bit of a fascist turn.
Yeah.
But
that's because... You know, what was happening all along, it added up to something. And, you know, I there are people who have named their children Khaleesi and gotten tattoos. You know, we're all tattoos on people. And you just got to maybe wait till the season finale, the series finale, before you get that tattoo or name your golden retriever Daenerys. You know, I mean, I can't help you. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
Did you expect that Tyrion would survive through to the end?
No, none of us did. None of us did. We were all nervous when we got the scripts, yeah.
Now that the show is done, you have a certain amount of cultural capital that you can really spend on doing things that you want. What do you want to do with it? You have a production company where you can make whatever you're interested in.
Yeah.
You probably have any, you know, choice of roles.
Actors, they come in the ninth inning after a lot of creativity has been sparked. And I'm trying to rewind and I'm producing now that inspires me. That sort of being on something from the ground floor, creating something with a writer or director that's what I'm doing now, acting perhaps much more selectively than I've been doing, which I think that's just a natural progression of getting older, you know, getting up at 5 a.m. in some strange location when you can be home in bed. It's that you really have to be a good project to get you there.
Since you get to rock out so much in Cyrano, is there any chance of getting Wizzy back together?
No, but I really want to make a cast album of Cyrano. That's a goal of mine. Never been on a cast album. So hopefully the band, The National, will consider that.
It's a real pleasure to talk to you. You Thanks too. For coming
Thank
in.
Thank you.
The actor Peter Dinklage, with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman in 2019. He plays the title role in the film Cyrano, which is nominated for an Academy Award this year for Best Costume Design. And I should say, Dinklage got his wish. There is a cast album, and Dinklage does sing on it. This is The New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. See you next time.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Merrill Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Ave Carrillo, Brita Green, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Gofen Mputubwele, Louis Mitchell, Michelle Moses, and Stephen Valentino, with help from Harrison Keithline and Mengfei Chen, and guidance from Emily Botine.
And we had additional help this week from Rhiannon Corby.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.